Hey, this is Callie Jansen, WIQH's news director. In episode 7 of Cue the Culture, leaders from Concord Carlisle's Intersections Club sat down to discuss something that has been central to the club's mission, culture. Today, their conversation focuses on the loss of culture and the factors that impact it: war, immigration, assimilation, communication barriers, and now the COVID-19 virus. Keep listening to hear the club dissect the issue of cultural loss through personal experiences and efforts to preserve culture. You can find them on Instagram at CCHS Intersections.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the 7th episode of Cue the Culture with some of our senior leaders. We are the Intersections Club, and we work to promote the diversity and culture at our school. And today, we are going to be talking about culture loss and our thoughts on the topic. So we first want to just go around and reintroduce ourselves and just talk about like what culture we identify with. So my name is Vicky. I'm Chinese American. My family specifically is from the cities of Shanghai and Hong Kong.
Hi, everyone. I'm Akshaya. I speak Tamil, and I was born in Sri Lanka.
My name is Stephanie, and I identify with Trinidadian culture. So that's the country of Trinidad and Tobago, which is an island off the coast of Venezuela, and my mom is from there.
Hi, my name is Joseph. I'm African-American, and my parents were born in the United States. So we don't know what specific country, like in Africa, they're from or anything like that. We just know that they were born in the United States.
So just to get us like kind of started on the topic, to like talk about cultural loss. So it's really just due to like changes in your environment, which could include like immigration, or just could be like trying to assimilate to a new culture. And there's also a factor of like changes that happen outside of your culture that you can't really control. So that could be war that leads to like mass immigration outside of the country, or environmental reasons, such as like loss of land. And yeah.
To start us off, I think like, as Akshaya said, like the major loss of culture for myself and my family is just being far from the country. So I think all of us can agree that we're kind of immersed in the American culture and the American way of life, that a lot of the things that are cultural to us and that we practice, like holidays, foods, and things like that, we have to, you know, go out of our way to find resources or restaurants or just stores that sell things that connect us back to the countries that we are from. So especially due to COVID, it can be a little bit more difficult to find those ways to be immersed in our own culture. And I feel like a lot of people due to COVID has lost a lot of part of themselves, or lost key family members or like grandparents who have kind of passed down those traditions. So I think it's important that culture and culture loss is talked about.
Oh, I definitely agree with like the distance from family. I think a little bit more background on me, I guess, like I'm technically first generation American citizen, because my parents immigrated from China to here, and I have no family except for my immediate family. So I definitely feel that there's just a lot of disconnect within me, to whether that be traditions or anything. And yeah, just having that distance from family in the actual country where their culture thrives in is kind of difficult. And it's hard to like really grasp at everything as I would have if I was in China.
And for me, I've always kind of felt that loss of culture, because I remember in US history, there was a project we had to do where we would interview our relatives, like grandparents, mothers, fathers, to kind of try to trace back our, you know, history. And like on the day that we presented them, like a lot of them were saying, oh yeah, my relatives were like born in like Poland or like in Russia or in France, stuff like that. And I was just like, oh yeah, my grandma was born down south, and then she moved to Massachusetts to have my mother. So I only can identify with like the African-American culture that started here. So I can't, and I mean, I guess I could find out through like the ancestry and things like that where I really originate from, but I could never truly like identify with that, because I just did not grow up like that. And unless I moved to the specific country where my ancestors were from and like really embrace the culture, I guess I could, you know, work towards embracing it like that. But for most African Americans, it's really kind of a different culture than like the one that they originated from originally, which is obviously kind of sad. But it's, we can't really do much about it.
Yes, we could move on to language. We think that language, I personally really think that language is lost, unfortunately, and apparently half the languages spoken around the world are expected to go extinct by the end of the century. And to think about that is just like crazy. It's a whole like medium of people conversing with each other and passing down stories just being lost. And I guess for myself, I feel this like quite directly because, you know, I do speak Mandarin, and I try to speak it and like keep it alive. But also, I also speak a dialect, like a Chinese dialect. I speak Shanghainese, and that is actually dying, basically, because the Chinese government did tell people to stop speaking the dialect a few years ago and just adopting Mandarin, but now it's like slowly coming back. But I think that's kind of hard because when I go back to China, and I always just hear like the elders being like, oh, like, they're Shanghainese and they can't even speak the language and whatnot. And that's just really sad and disappointing, I guess. And also some more background, I guess. I am a dual citizen with Hong Kong, and yet I don't know how to speak Cantonese. So kind of embarrassing sometimes. But I think just like all these languages and not being able to communicate is also a big difficulty. And I hope I can try and pick it up and learn it from my family and whatnot, but it's also kind of sad.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Vicky's perspective on that. I think going back to like the distance part of it, like just being away from the country that fully speaks the language is super hard because when you come to America, you're definitely expected to learn English. And that's like the school, I mean, like when you're in school and everything, you're like talking in English and everything. But then when I go home, that's the only opportunity I have to speak Tamil. And I think especially being that like a lot of people from Sri Lanka moved out of the country, it's like a whole diaspora like everywhere around the world. Everyone kind of speaks the native languages of the country they're only living in. So there is like a risk of losing the language just in terms of if parents don't pass down the language, there's like no real way to pick it up later in life, I feel like. So that is like one concern, I guess, that I have personally.
Yeah, I couldn't personally like feel that in any way because the language that they speak in Trinidad is mainly English, and my mom grew up speaking English. There was no other language in my family, so there isn't really that fear of like losing a language. But you know, definitely when I go back to Trinidad, it's easy to see that the accents are different and things like that. So I'm recognizably different from everybody else in my family. But when I'm there for like a week, like I begin picking up different slang terms, I begin picking up the accent. And even here at home, when my mom starts referring to Trinidadian language, Trinidadian culture, or speaks about a Trinidadian meal, like she automatically picks up the accent, like even mid sentence, it's just like that. So I think it's kind of funny in a way that it is like a dual lingual in a way that you're picking up the accent and you start speaking about terms that relate to that culture. But we don't really fear about losing a language in that way.
Kind of similar to Stephanie, I don't have that fear of like loss of language because I don't even know what language I should know. But I just remember I always feel like jealous of my friends who know their country language. Like when like Shia just like is on the phone with like her mom or father just whips out the Tamil, I'd be like, dang, like why can't I just know like my own country's language or just like find out what country I'm from. And every time I tell someone like what language I'm learning, I'm currently trying to learn French. I don't know. I just always feel like I've been like colonized, or that's probably the right word, but I always feel like I'm like allowing myself to be colonized. I'm like, oh, I'm learning French. Oui, oui, bonjour. And like, no, I'm like not learning my like my country's like language that could be dying out. And I have no idea. So it just feels kind of like a betrayal when I'm learning a already popular language that will probably never die out for a really long time, instead of like the language that could be dying out, you know, that I should be learning and should put effort into trying to preserve because, you know, only a few people speak it still.
I think that's a really good point though, Joseph. Like, even at our school, like the languages that we do have offered are predominantly white dominant, like French, Spanish, and Latin. And like the people who take Chinese is like a small minority of the people who take languages at our school. And we don't even have the option to take other languages that are offered at other school, like Arabic or Japanese. And I don't know if there would, if we need that language to be offered to us, because I don't know if people would be interested in taking that language, because maybe they just see like the European ways and things like that. I don't know if that's more appealing, that people think that they're going to need those languages more than they would need Arabic. So I don't know why that is or why we don't offer that, but I feel like that might add on to your point a little bit, Joseph.
Yeah, I feel that I am Chinese and I do take Chinese, and something everyone always says to me is like, oh, are you doing it just for like the easy whatnot? I can't read Chinese. It's really not the same. And like my pronunciation isn't always perfect and I have a lot to work on. And I think like that's, you know, why I'm taking it. But something else I was just thinking about was like, I don't know if people realize how in one family, like the amount of language one can like hold on to is, it's different. And like, for example, my parents are obviously fluent in like however many like Mandarin and like other Chinese dialects, because I feel like Chinese dialects are also whole other languages in themselves. Like some of them just don't even resemble Mandarin and it sounds completely different. So there's that. And then there's like me, who's kind of, I feel like I'm in the middle where I can like grasp it. I can hold on to a regular conversation. If I was like in a school trying to like learn stuff, I don't think I could survive. But then there's like my brother, who really barely speaks the language. And I think, you know, it's like a whole spectrum and it's in one family. And I think it's something like maybe people don't really think about, but like when you can't even converse with your whole family, like in the same way, you have to adjust to every single person. And I just think that's like very interesting.
Yeah, I just do relate to that, I guess. As the youngest person, I definitely think that I'm in the same boat as your brother, because like when I moved from Sri Lanka to America, I was like 3 years old. So there wasn't really a way for me to like still stay in touch with that, other than like when my grandparents would visit and I had to like speak to them only in Tamil. Whereas like if I'm just speaking with my parents, like I definitely use like a mix of both English and Tamil just for like convenience sake and like trying to get my point across. And yeah, I guess that is interesting to think about, how even like age order in the same family affects like how much you know of the language.
Definitely. And I guess you can move on to another subtopic about culture loss. So maybe we could just open up to like food, traditions, and history that we feel like, you know, could get lost. I know for me personally, I love Chinese food, but I can't cook it. I feel like there's like that like little touch my mother has to it that just makes it taste like Chinese. And I don't know if I could replicate that in the future. I should definitely learn. But like, for example, I think some literal examples would be like when my grandmother is over, she's folding dumplings. She knows how to make like these sticky rice things with these bamboo wrap stuff. And I have no idea how to do any of it. They just kind of eyeball and it works and it's like magic. And I'm kind of concerned that all I can make is like pasta in the future or like instant ramen. That's like the closest I can get to it. So yeah, lots of food. But if anyone else has anything to say on that.
Well, I kind of see like this as well for my mom. So my mom actually moved here from Trinidad when she was like 16 or 18. So right after she was a teenager around our age. So for her right now, she's trying to learn all of the meals. So she usually gets like food from my aunt or from my grandmother. She just goes to their house and they've already made her Trinidadian meals and she like takes it home. But right now she's like going through this phase where she's like desperately trying to take down all the recipes and like trying to learn everything to like pass down to us. And so like I also feel that fear that you feel, Vicky, that like I'm not going to learn any of this. And like I don't know how much I do want to learn, because half of the things I don't actually like, half of the things I really do like, but the things I do like are like really complicated. So there's definitely like meals that I enjoy, and I think over the years I've definitely seen that like few things have been stopped, or traditions that we've had have stopped just because of like timing and things like that. So every morning we used to have this souse, which is like a soup type dish. It has like lime juice and cucumbers and pig's foot. And we would go to church every morning and we'd come home and it'd be right on the table with bread and stuff. But now because of everything, it's like we're not able to gather as like a large family anymore. So we've lost that tradition, but like the food is still out there. Like it still exists. We just are like enjoying it separately.
Yeah, I guess going off of like the how COVID-19 has also kind of affected it, like we also have like a Thumble community like in the Boston area. So one thing that we'd always do is like almost I think every week we'd have like some sort of party and there'd be like some sort of get together. So like there was always like Thumble food around, and I think even in my house, like we always have Thumble food, but it's definitely just access to ingredients. I think there aren't really like authentic like Thumble stores. There are definitely like Indian stores nearby, but just like access to like real like ingredients. Like we normally like order from Canada and like get it shipped over. So it's definitely like another step of kind of like, how do you stay connected when there's like so many different obstacles in the path of just like making one dish or something. So I think that's another challenge in the future to try to address.
Yeah, speaking of like importing food, like whenever someone comes home from Trinidad, you're expected to bring like a whole bag of like preserves for everyone. And so because of COVID-19, like no one has had their stockpile of preserves updated. So it's like, it's so crazy that like that's shared among different cultures, that like the only way to actually get like authentic food or fruits and vegetables is like to either you go there and you bring it back, or you go get it from Canada, or I think my family like travels to New York or something like every 2 months, because like those are where the communities are, and that's where you can know you can get like the most authentic ingredients for what you need to make the food.
I definitely feel a bit more lucky in that department because there's like Chinatown in Boston, and I can like make that trip. Obviously, like even in COVID, I guess arguably I haven't been there. But I think food tradition-wise, like dim sum, my family is pretty big on that. It's definitely like a big community gathering kind of thing. And you just like share the food, family style and whatnot. And I guess like this is maybe more of an ABC kind of experience, or like Asian-born American, American-born Chinese, like experience of Asian gatherings, like Akshaya was talking about, where it's just like a bunch of the parents, they are all speaking the native language. The kids are just like watching TV or playing video games. We're like, oh my gosh, like there they go again, talking about all of us, thinking we don't understand them, but we do. And just like the food and all of that. And I feel like in the future, I don't know if I could do the same, like for example, like for my kids, or if it's going to be the same for second gen kids and whatnot.
Joseph, your dad was a chef, right?
So yeah, like... I was just about to comment on that. So for us, I mean, my mom and my father, they tried to learn like kind of like very popular general African recipes. My mom tried fufu once, so it was really, really good. But we also, I guess because of another subset of in America with like the whole soul food, and that kind of more attached to us, because that's like with that's associated with Black American families. So a lot of recipes in that was like, it's not really like just to us, like those recipes, like it's like mac and cheese, you know what I mean? Like you can cook it in a specific way, but it's a very like general recipe that like everyone can do. But you know really typical, it's like soul foods and you know, cookout foods, because cookouts are very popular with Black families, kind of going with, like you said, like the gatherings. I think like with those cookouts, because they're not like, because we're all speaking like English, which will probably be a dominant language, as you said, Stephanie, like 100 years or end of the century. It's not like this, the specific thing that's like, we hope we can like keep on doing. It's like a cookout. You told that we can keep, like, you know, you can just go there and like cook food and like talk with each other and everything, and it's like the same thing over and over again. But with the recipes, yeah, my dad was a chef. He cooked for the Red Sox team. And I mean, he tried to teach me. I'm terrible at cooking, so I did not catch on. But it wasn't really like any specific recipe. It was just like recipes of like anything. Oh, I guess meatloaf. I love meatloaf. My dad was like, you loved meatloaf when you were a kid. You ate a whole loaf by yourself once, which is really embarrassing. But yeah, it's kind of more generalized in that aspect.
No, I totally agree about like cookouts. Like for cookouts, it's like, even though you may come from like different cultures or you think you come from different areas or different countries, like a cookout is like generally a good place for people just to come together and like share a meal. And like, it's very accepting, warm place. And like, they always say, like, if you're accepted to the cookout, like if you're invited, you got to bring a meal. But like, once you're in, you're in. So I feel like cookouts is like a tradition in and of itself that passes along culture and like a really good community place.
Absolutely. Well, I think like one way to preserve it, I love food. I think we can all agree that we love the food of our culture. So, you know, never afraid to go hit up a good restaurant. That will not leave me, I guess. And we can maybe talk about how we experience our cultures now and how that might look differently in the future. I think this is something I definitely think about from time to time, especially as we're graduating and kind of like leaving our homes, because, you know, like when you're at home, you just eat what's given to you. And it just so happens to, you know, sometimes be like from our culture, and you don't really have to worry about it. Like, you don't really have to think about it that much. You just kind of follow your parents, do what they do, and it seems to work out. But like, I can't imagine, like, I just thought about how I'm going to be eating cafeteria food, and that might not be exactly like, obviously it's not going to be exactly what I eat at home, but that touch of culture is going to be gone, and I'm going to have to actively search for it myself, which is going to be much different. So yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of excited for college because I feel like, I don't know, just in like looking at colleges, I feel like there's so many clubs and like student organizations that I feel like that's where I'll be able to get my little culture fix in a way. Like, I feel like I'm really excited to join different groups and like kind of embrace like learning about culture and like learning about how I can incorporate college and culture, if that makes any sense. So I'm excited to meet people who like share my culture, that are from elsewhere, that are pursuing like the same education. And I don't know, I'm hopeful. I'm really hopeful.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it'd be super cool to like find people of like the same culture, and I'd also want to like explore different cultures. I feel like college would be like the perfect time to meet people from like all around the country, all around the world, and learn about different cultures.
Something I was thinking about college as well is, I mean, I think a lot of people know like China is a huge country. There are a lot of Chinese people around the world, just like everywhere. In college, you definitely see a lot of international Chinese students coming in. And as an ABC, and like I've seen a lot of other people talk about this in the community, there's a divide between people who are Chinese in China who come to the US and people who are like American born Chinese. And I've read some, you know, things where like they just kind of separate themselves into different groups. And I think that's so unfortunate because a lot of American born Chinese students and people feel a lot of shame for not being able to experience like Chinese culture the way mainland Chinese people have, and that's quite unfortunate. Like, I even read in some like random thread or something how like the international students were like talking amongst themselves. One of them dropped something, and then this girl who like looked Chinese, obviously they assumed, and she was just like, oh, is this yours? And then the mainland Chinese people were just like, oh, why isn't she speaking Chinese to us? And like, they're in America and whatnot, but it's just obvious that there's some kind of like shame and disconnect between American born Chinese people and like Chinese people. So I'm curious to see how that interaction will go with me. Kind of concerned, but definitely excited as well because of all the different clubs.
I definitely agree, Vicky, that like there's definitely like a hierarchy of like people who grew up immersed in that culture and then come to America versus people who were Americanized from when they were young. And I'm honestly like really afraid of that myself because I am mixed. Like Trinidadian is like half of like who I am, but I identify ethnically as Trinidadian, because that's how I was raised. Like, most of the things that I practice and the traditions that I follow is from my mom. And so I'm always afraid that someone's just going to, like, come up to me and be like, you're a fraud. Like, I'm always scared that someone's going to say something and be like, you're not enough of something to be enough of who you are, if that makes any sense. So I don't know. We're going to see how that all plays out. But I'm trying to just hold on to the fact that, like, no one can really take away my own culture. Like, they can judge me all they want, but at the end of the day, like, you can't tell me who I am. So we're going to see how this plays out.
Absolutely. I mean, if we're talking along, like, our cultures, quote unquote, like, not really accepting us wholly, I think, like, elders and everything, they always, like, cut me some slack and, like, oh, she's American, like, she's from America. And in America, I'm like, I'm Chinese. But then when I'm in China, I'm like, I'm American. Like, I don't say Chinese American. Like, I just get straight up labeled as American. They're like, oh, do you want your cold water or whatnot? Like, I'm like, no, I'll have tea. Like, it's okay. But yeah, it's just really weird, like, limbo between the two, where you don't really know where you lie. And I guess being in the middle of it, there's like a whole subgroup that you just end up falling into and identifying with as like a shared group experience. I guess, like, something how I experience culture now, honestly, if anyone knows the Facebook group Subtle Asian Traits, there's a lot that you just, like, are able to identify with in there, at least for me personally, how, like, Asians experience the world, which is pretty funny how similar the experience is.
Kind of jumping off of Vicky's point of, like, feeling rejected by your own culture, like, this kind of connects back to the point I made with, like, learning French and kind of feeling like I'm betraying my own culture. Like, every time I, like, want to, like, dye my hair or, you know, like, I want to wear, like, a specific outfit, I'm like, oh, this feels like, I'm just like this, like, looking in the eyes of, like my relatives, like imagining what they would think if they saw me, they'd be like, wow, we lost another one. You know what I mean? Because, like, even with, like, my, like, close relatives, and then my dad told my grandma I dyed my hair, like, teal. And she was like, what did you do that for? And I was like, oh, don't worry, grandma. I it's not teal anymore. It's regular, like, black. And she was like, good, good. And, like, when I was a baby, I used to have really long hair. And then, like, my parents cut it off. And they've always wanted me to grow it back out again. But I just, like, I want to keep it short so I can dye it easily. And my mom was, like, always, like, why don't you grow out your hair? Every time I ask her what I should do with my hair next time. And I'm like, no, mom, I don't really want to do that. And she's like, why? It's in the Bible. And I was like, okay. Like, all right, mom, listen, I don't want to talk about that right now. So yeah, I just feels weird because it's like this culture that we have now, like the black African family, it's just, like, already different from the culture that we all, like, have in, like, Africa, and the one that we should be learning. And so it kind of feels like a double sword kind of thing, or not double sword, but kind of two different things, where it's like I'm not learning my African culture, which I really should be learning. So if I didn't, and if I tried to learn that, I kind of feel like I'd be rejected, because they'd be like, oh, you're born in America, like, you know, bye. And then in America, it's like with the culture we created here, because I want to do, like, different things, I feel like I would get rejected from this one, where it's just like, oh, you want to dye your hair, like, teal and not grow it out? Like, oh my gosh, like, bye. So yeah, it kind of feels a little isolating sometimes, like, with some decisions that I make. But I think there are a lot of people who also go through that, so it's not like I'm completely alone, but it could have that feeling at some point.
Absolutely. Sounds like we all feel that to some degree, unfortunately. But I guess maybe, like, on a more positive note, if there are any ways that we hope to learn and carry our cultures as we grow older, I could go first. I definitely think learning languages is something really big for me, because, like, it unlocks a whole world of being able to converse with others and learning knowledge. So I'm definitely looking forward to, like, learning Cantonese, expanding on my Shanghainese, and way I hope to grow that, watching C-dramas. Watching Chinese dramas, that has honestly helped me so much. Like, getting my entertainment from Chinese media has, like, because they do things like in certain ways as well. Like, Chinese shows, you know, do it the way the Chinese culture would attack it, and then like American shows see everything in like an American point of view. It's like really interesting to see it from a different culture's point of view, and I think that's really helped me grasp it a lot better. Like, the interactions that people have with each other, like how that goes, the language, being able to like keep up with people, and like having it fresh in my mind. So that is a way I very much look forward to keeping the culture alive, and joining clubs and whatnot.
Yeah, I guess to add on, I think the first thing I'll do is definitely say my name right. I think that'll be the first step to embracing my culture fully. And then I think, as Vicky said, I'll probably just keep trying to learn Tamil. Like, my pronunciation definitely is not where it should be in terms of like an authentic like Tamil speaker. So I think I'll like continue like trying to force myself to speak in Tamil rather than looking for like an easier way with like switching in English. And I think it's always like fun to find people who share your culture. I think I'll continue to like look for communities of like people from South Asia. And
I think for me, like, getting back to my culture has definitely been a long journey. I think especially with like embracing my hair has been like a huge step for me about like embracing it and like kind of getting ready to like spread it in a way. I think that like I definitely, starting in like kindergarten, I hated my hair, hated having it braided, everything like that. I would come home with my hair unbraided. My mom would definitely yell at me. She'd be like, "Who did you let touch your hair, Stephanie?" And I'd be like, "Mom, like, I don't know, we were like playing dress up." But definitely learned over the years that that was not acceptable, should never have let that happen. And I feel like I've kind of gotten back to that, and I've been like braiding my own hair. Like, I learned from a young age how to braid my hair. And that's been like passed down through my family. Like, my mom got her hair braided by her mother, and I got my hair braided by my mother and my grandmother. So that's something that I've really cherished and like have started to appreciate a lot more, and kind of accepted that in my own life with like wearing my hair braided to school and things like that. And hair is definitely a big deal in my family. Like, I cut my hair really short because I had a huge knot in it in fifth grade when my mom let me actually do my hair by myself. I knotted it. So my grandma was very upset, but now I'm like growing it back, and my grandma is like very happy because it's a huge sign in Trinidadian culture of like wealth and prosperity and beauty. So I feel like just cherishing the things that I have and I know that I can share with my ancestry is really important to me, and passing down like little traditions, I think, is going to be a huge part of keeping it alive, especially like ear piercings. I got my ear pierced when I was 3 months old, which is actually surprising to a lot of people, but that's something that is really cherished in our culture because the sign of wealth, again, of having jewelry, and just passing down jewelry is important. So I'm excited to do that as well, and, you know, cherish those little things.
Yeah, I've probably been very depressing on this podcast, but kind of similar to what Stephanie was saying about the little things that you can pass down. Like, I could that's what I'm definitely, in the future, what I would definitely do to preserve my culture. You know, like, you know, the cookout to, like, for some reason, Black families love to find one barber and just like develop a familial relationship with them to the point where it's like they are your family, and I actually have one of my own. So just like little things like that you could do, you know, just like that I could do myself if I want to get a family. And also just like with the clubs part, going to college, like BSU, and just like a lot of BSU groups that I've actually, I follow some BSU groups from colleges. They really just promote like being unapologetically Black, which is something that I've definitely been trying to grow into. I know, like, in elementary school, I had this one dream that I will always remember, where I went to school in my regular hair, and like everyone was like, "Oh, like, he's like ugly." And like the next day I came back in like a straight blonde wig, like one of the white boys. Everyone was like, "Oh my gosh." And I remember they chased me out of the school because everyone loved me, and I was trying to get away from them. And then in the end, they surrounded me and they were like, "Can I have your number?" I don't know. I always remember that dream. It is so terrible. But, you know, comparing that to, like, I think, like, 2 years ago, like, I did a TED Talk, like, at school about, like, diversity and, like, how important it is to have Black people there. So I like that juxtaposition because it's, like, seeing how far I've grown and just, like, trying to instill that into other people I know where it's, like, just, like, being you and, like, not letting anyone try to tell you different, just, like, embracing the culture that you do know and that you have learned. And just keeping that throughout your life and trying to pass it on to others.
I absolutely agree with that. And I think a lot of people, like, especially in the US, who might have, like, other cultures that they strongly identify with, sometimes it gets suppressed by American culture and, like, what we think, like, people are judging us, and we're so, like, worried about how other people are perceiving us that we don't take the time to just, like, let ourselves just kind of be immersed into the culture and, like, appreciate it for what it is. Because, like you said, I've definitely had my fair share of, like, embarrassing moments where, like, Mom, like, don't say that, or, like, don't speak to me in, like, this and whatnot. And, like, looking back, it's kind of a shame to know that I ever felt that way at any point. But yeah, hopefully that's not the case in the future. And I mean, oh, also, like, I think speaking with family about, like, familial history and stories has helped me a lot. Like, my grandparents were here for a few months. They were stuck here because of COVID for some time, but that honestly left a lot of room for stories. And, like, I learned so much about, like, my culture and my history. Like, I had never known that my grandmother, like, tried foot binding for a day, but she ran away because she said it was too painful. And, like, how that kind of stuff was, like, only generations away. Like, that's crazy for me to even think about. And just hearing those stories, like, from my grandparents, grandpa and grandma, and, like, from my parents about their journey to the U.S., it just makes me appreciate it so much more and want to learn more about it, because, like, there's something there that is connected to me, and I think, like, nobody would say no to learning more about that.
I definitely agree with you, Vicky. Like, stories are so powerful. I remember growing up, my mom would tell this, like, the story series of her growing up in Trinidad, and it would start, like, once upon a time on an island far, far away, and she would start every single night telling us a story about her childhood, and she always said she would write it down for us, but I just remember those stories of her and, like, her two brothers and her sisters, like, venturing out on the really hilltop that they lived on and, like, going to the waterfall behind Aunt Mary's house, and then when I got older, I was able to go to that waterfall, and it was just, like, such an experience of being able to, like, hear about it growing up and then, like, going and visiting it, and now I can, like, pass down those stories as well. So I feel like stories are, like, something that are, like, really powerful, and I'm just, I don't know, there's nothing really to say about stories, because, like, once you, like, experience, like, a really good story, like, you just, I don't know, you feel it in your soul somehow.
Yeah, I don't know, like, my mom didn't tell me a lot of stories, but she told me this one story when this was because of the U.S. History Project, about how she came to be living in Massachusetts, you know, how my grandma was born in the South and was a sharecropper and saved as much money as she could, because she had 10 children, and she had to try to get all of them from the South to the North. And, you know, just a story about how she had to leave 5 of them in the South and then come to the North with the other 5, and then she had to go back to the other 5 and come back up here. Just, like, that story, even though I don't have a lot, that one's really powerful to me, because it shows, like, how resilient she was, and, you know, how hard she fought to get all her children to a better, get them all a better life and to a better place. So even though it's not a lot, it's a really powerful story that I will always keep with me.
We are coming to a close. And I guess just bringing back to our club and, like, where we all started, I think Intersections was definitely founded with the idea that we don't really talk about our cultures at school. There's no, like, space solely dedicated to sharing who you are besides, like, your academics or your sports. And I think we definitely try to honor who we are, where we come from. And I hope that'll, like, continue happening in the future, like with the Multicultural Food Festival. I think that's a really great way to learn about different cultures and just show, like, the diversity that exists at CCHS. So I think there's so much more that could be done, but where we are right now is really good too.
Yeah, I'm just really excited for the future of intersections. You know, we have our flags now up in the cafeteria, which is a sign of, you know, our unity from all these different countries that are here under the same roof, learning and experiencing different ways. So I'm really excited about that. And I'm also excited because, like, just this last club meeting, a lot of people vocalized that they wanted to experience different cultures and learn new languages, and, like, kind of get snippets of, like, the cultures that are represented within our own club. So I'm excited to see how we're going to be able to, like, share that with each other and share who we are with each other and, you know, help each other to learn about different cultures and maybe spark some inspiration about things that other people can learn about, like, outside of school. So excited to see where that goes.
Yeah, definitely, like, the open dialogue and the room for it in our club is also, like, really amazing. I found how, you know, along the line of stories, like, there's always a lot of discussion and storytelling that does go on in our meetings, and it just, like, happens naturally. But it's like something, like, people have to get out of themselves, I feel like, and there's no real outlet other than the club sometimes, like, in our school. So it's been great to hear and see, and also with Crossroads, you know, literal storytelling of different cultures and, like, topics that'll get kids thinking as well, and hopefully let them embrace their cultures and their different identities as they grow up, is really encouraging. So yeah, lots of positives coming out from the club. I mean, if we don't have anything else to add on to culture loss, which is a really heavy topic, honestly, but I think it really takes everybody, like, within their own selves to find how to navigate it, because we all experience culture to a different degree and are, like, grasping it to different levels as well. So definitely a lot of self-exploration, but I think it's important to have a place that's inviting and open to allow someone to really explore it for themselves and have that opportunity, which is super important. And definitely, like, this podcast helps a lot for me personally, just, like, being able to tell all these random snippets that I wouldn't be talking about in my math class for sure, but here they all are in the open. But yeah, and with that, I think, you know, we thank everyone for listening to this episode, this long-awaited episode. It's been a hot minute because of college apps, but we're back. And yeah, thank you so much for listening, and we will be back soon. Thank you.